And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the handful in attendance and the millions listening on the web on skidrow.la, this is Mat Time Radio.
All right, everybody, we're back. Mat Time Radio, first new show of the year. I'm Rich, and I got Crail here with me.
Yes, sir.
We're coming to you live from beautiful downtown, good smelling Los Angeles today.
Yeah, smelling delicious out there today.
extra special. But we're excited because finally we're back on the air with everybody. New year, new show, and we got an exciting new guest. Who do we got, Crail?
We got Grandmaster, 7th degree Taekwondo black belt, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, Andre Lima in studio. Hi, Andre.
Everything great. Nice, you know, to be here, and thank you for the invitation. You know, looking forward to talk to you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
All right. Yeah, you know, thanks for coming out on a Sunday. I know it's a day of rest for everybody usually, but we're happy to be back with our guests now, and you know.
So just make sure we're on live. So if you want to call the show, you got some questions for Professor Lima, you can call us at 1-800-893-9562.
Or you can find us on Facebook. You can catch us on Twitter if you have any questions at Mat Time Radio. Or just call the show, and if we can get, we'll put your question on the air, or if you want to, you know, speak with our guest.
Oh, wait, we forgot to clap for
Wait, we got a studio audience today.
Yeah, okay, let me find it. Hold on.
Oh, no, wait, we got to hear from our studio audience.
It didn't work, man.
Oh, well. Okay, we're trying.
Next time.
Jitterbugs, it's okay. There we go. There's our studio audience. I think they just came back from the restroom and, they
won this. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wrong one, all right.
It looks like a whole soccer stadium just showed up.
All right, man. Go ahead. Let's get into it.
Yeah, well, exciting as our sport is. And we're real happy to have someone that has actually a different view of our sport and loads of experience. And we're real excited to start with you. You know, how did you get your start in martial arts?
I've been doing martial arts for around 33 years. And I'm Brazilian. And I started in Brazil, of course. And I started with Taekwondo when I was a teenager. You know, I asked my father to sign me up in a Taekwondo school as a birthday gift. And he didn't want to do it. I tried for two birthdays in a row. In the third one, it worked. And so I started in Taekwondo. I liked Taekwondo. I was really attracted to the kicking and all the flash movements of Taekwondo. And I was living in Brasilia, which is the capital of Brazil. And I start there and start competing. And my Taekwondo master, his name is Carlos Lodo. When I was training Taekwondo, he told me, oh, you have later to do something called Jiu-Jitsu. And I didn't know what was Jiu-Jitsu.
And what year was this about, would you say?
It was in the 1980.
Oh, in the 80s.
1980. And I believe he told me about Jiu-Jitsu. It was in 81. Mm-hmm. And then in 83, my family moved from Brasilia to the north of Brazil, to a city called Fortaleza. It's by the ocean. It's a beautiful city in north of Brazil. When I got to Fortaleza, I found out there was no Taekwondo in that city. So I got there, I was 17. So at 18, I opened the first Taekwondo school in Fortaleza. And then at the same year, I looked for Jiu-Jitsu. And I remember what my master told me, oh, go and look for Jiu-Jitsu. And then I found Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. At that time, and in Brazil, we just called Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. We didn't call Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, just Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. So in my city, there was two schools. So I found a Jiu-Jitsu school, and I started training Jiu-Jitsu. And I believe it was 85, 86, with a master. His name is Master Sa, S-A. Mm-hmm. Now he's a red belt 9 degree. And his kids, they take took over the school. The school is still there. Mm-hmm. And his kids took over the school. One of his sons is in the United States. He lives in New York, I believe. And the other one, the oldest one, it's Sa Junior. He is head of the school in Brazil. And basically that was my beginning.
And would you say that school, it being a non-Gracie school, was it following really like the traditional Japanese style of jiu-jitsu, or was it, you know, still evolving at that point? Or
no, it was they were following the jiu-jitsu that the Gracies do. I learned, you know, back then the same thing. Mm-hmm. It was not Japanese jiu-jitsu. It was the Brazilian jiu-jitsu based on the guard. You know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is 80% guard. You know, mm-hmm. everything about the guard, passing the guard, half guard, defending the guard, open guard, close guard, everything's about the guard. I learned the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you see a strong influence in the Asian martial arts, especially, you know, in Brasilia where there was a lot of Taekwondo? Is there a lot of Asian influence in the martial arts there?
Yes. Brazil, it is the second country in the world that have more Japanese after Japan, outside Japan. It's the biggest Japanese colony, and that has a huge influence. The Chinese and the Korean colony also big. But the Japanese, they start immigrating to Brazil in early 1900s, beginning of the 20th century. And that actually had an influence on the beginning of what we call today Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because the Japanese man who came to Brazil and taught the Gracies, Maeda, he was part of this immigration that started early in the 20th century.
Okay.
Now, training the both martial arts, did the two, you know, did they complement each other? Did you find, you know, different techniques, like they were similar with Taekwondo and Jiu-Jitsu? Did you get to, like, you know, kind of merge the two, or were they two totally separate things?
No, I think actually it was kind of the opposite, because in Taekwondo, everything is, you kicking, everything is to the outside. In the Jiu-Jitsu, you are bringing somebody to you. Is the opposite. Even the muscles of your body, you know, in Taekwondo, you are doing the opposite work. And I believe the two complement each other a lot. I believe any kind of striking system combined with a grappling system is a good combination. If you put karate and judo, or if you put boxing and like wrestling, it will be a good combination. They're very different.
And amongst like martial arts communities, you know, back in that time, was there any rivalry between the different martial arts in the schools? Did one kind of look down upon the other, or vice versa?
Yes, I have great memories of that. When I have very funny stories about that. When I came, I started jiu-jitsu, right at the beginning, there was, before I entered to this one master called Master Sa, which was my first jiu-jitsu master, I went to another small school, and I was there for a couple months, and I was really discriminated, me and my taekwondo friends, and I had one karate friend too that I took with me, four guys, and we had to fight every Saturday. There was like a vale tudo training, and I even have a tape, old VHS tape. I just actually transferred to a digital format. Any day I'm going to put this on the YouTube. And of the training we used to do in the Saturdays, we did jiu-jitsu during the week. Saturday was a vale tudo day. Mm-hmm. Open hand strikes. We could do all taekwondo kicks, and jiu-jitsu was really violent. And I don't know how I did that, but it was. I didn't have a name on that school. They didn't call me Andre Lima. They called me Taekwondo guy. It was a fun time, but it was very tough. I have great memories of it.
Yeah, it seems like obviously most people's knowledge of jiu-jitsu comes from, you know, the UFC or fights like that on TV. And obviously people see Lyoto Machida, who's from Brazil, but he's, you know, he's a kicker. What's his style?
Shotokan karate.
Yeah, Shotokan, right? Yeah. So it's I think most people think that that's all there is in Brazil, is just Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But I think when you were talking, that's not really the case, right?
No. Okay. I can tell you a little bit the history of jiu-jitsu first, mm-hmm. and then tell you what was the situation when I was a teenager in Brazil related to martial arts. Okay. Sure. Beginning with the history of jiu-jitsu, the Gracies, they arrived in Brazil from Scotland. And in the 1800s, I think it was 1826, that the first Gracie arrived in Brazil. His name was George Gracie. He was the man who, you know, moved from Scotland to Brazil. And then the Gracies we know, Carlos and Helio, they are third generation in Brazil. Okay, the great-grandfather was George, the one who came. He had married somebody named Mariana, and they had a bunch of kids. One of the kids was Pedro Gracie. He was the one of the first generation Gracies in Brazil. Pedro got married also with somebody named Maria, had a bunch of kids, and one of the kids was Gastão. Gastão was second generation. So Gastão got married with Casalina, and yes, the third generation came, and then was eight kids. Those are the ones we know, Carlos Gracie, Helio, and then Osvaldo, George, and there was one more, and then three girls. It was eight total. Those Gracies are the one who started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu began in a very interesting way. In early 1900s, Gastão Gracie, who was the father of Helio and Carlos, he was a kind of man that he used to change business. Every 2 years, he would do a different business. If the business worked, he kept doing. If it doesn't work, he changed for something totally different. He had one time, he was involved in a making of dynamite to make explosions in mines. There was a lot of mines at the time, and he did that business for a while. And then around 1914 or 15, he heard of a circus, you know, a circus with like lions and elephants. Uh-huh. There was a circus in a town right close to his town. And then the circus was doing very good. And then he contacted the circus to bring to his city, you know, which was Belém. The name of the city, Belém, and the state was Pará. He brought the circus to the city. And one of the attractions of the circus was Maeda, the Japanese man who knew Japanese jiu-jitsu and judo. So he became a friend of Maeda. And after a while, Maeda told Gastão that he was really interested in staying in Belém because there was a lot of Japanese immigrants there. And he just loved the city and, you know, the fact that he had people from his country. So Gastão helped him to establish and stay in the city. In exchange, Maeda, after a while, started teaching jiu-jitsu in his own house first. Mm-hmm. And he offered to teach Gastão kids. And then that's when they started teaching Carlos and Oswaldo and George. Helio was very little. I believe he's 10 years younger than Carlos. If Carlos was 15 when he started jiu-jitsu, Helio probably was 5.
Wow. Okay. So it's almost like Carlos is the...
He's the father, yes.
Well, from what I read too, Helio was really, you know, from the brothers, he was the smaller one, and he was kind of, he was like, they said he was the weaker one, and he wasn't very athletic like the others and stuff.
Yeah, Helio took to the next level, you know. He made so much propaganda and, you know, the challenger, and, you know, he took to the next level. But the first one was Carlos. And Carlos only did jiu-jitsu for a little less than 4 years. He did start in 1915. I believe he was 15, 1915. And he did jiu-jitsu with Maeda until 17, 2 years. And then Maeda went to England to I believe, Liverpool for 1 year. And Carlos kept training with one of the instructors of Maeda. When Maeda came back, Carlos did another year. So he had about close to 4 years of jiu-jitsu. And then the family left to Rio de Janeiro. And he never saw Maeda again, you know. Mm-hmm. He went to Rio with a little less than 4 years of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Can you imagine something happened to that boy? We're not here today talking.
Yeah.
No UFC, no nothing.
Did they have belt ranks back then? I mean, was Carlos given a belt by Maeda?
I don't know details about that.
Oh, okay.
I believe he may got a black belt, but I don't know. I'm not sure. I read several books about it, but I know he went to Rio, and I believe was 1919, I believe. He started in 1915, and he was 19 years old. When he got to Rio, his father, Gastão, told him, listen, you are 19, you have to find a job. And then he tried to work in a few things. I think he was not happy with anything. And then somebody gave him the idea of teach self-defense for the police. And I think he went to the from Rio to São Paulo and spent a year or two there teaching the police, came back. And then he had the idea, okay, I can teach this. And then he kept teaching the brothers. And then they start teaching at the house until, I believe, 1925, when they opened the first Gracie Academy. And the Gracies, at that time, they did not have the federation, or they didn't have the master anymore because they didn't see Maeda. So they are not connected to any organization to control them. So they could start making changes as much as they want because they are their own boss in the art.
Right. So what was the basic difference between the jiu-jitsu Maeda was showing them and what the Gracies put together?
Well, the Japanese jiu-jitsu is a lot on self-defense. It's like, for example, you attack me, you do attack my neck, grab my neck, I throw you and finish you. Or you hug me from the back, I do a throw and finish you. It was like a couple moves finishing with submission. It was not a continuous fighting. It was more of a martial arts self-defense system. The Gracies transform into like really a sport, because some martial arts, they are sports. For example, karate, taekwondo, judo, you can go and watch the tournament, the competition, who's the karate champion of California or who's the taekwondo champion of the United States. But we have other styles like aikido, hapkido, and I believe Japanese jiu-jitsu, they don't have competition. They are only system of self-defense. I think that the Gracies, they really made big into like transforming in a fighting system. Maeda was fighting people, you know, taking charges. But the Gracies, they develop a lot of things. I believe they develop the guard, because the jiu-jitsu is based on the guard today.
Right. Well, looking at some of the early advertisements, even for the Gracie family, they're comparing it to like being on the beach and, you know, big guy comes and tries to take your girlfriend, kicks sand in your face, and then guy goes to gym, works out, comes back, and, you know, standing arm bars them on the beach, you know. It's funny to see those little videos, though.
Yeah, I mean, they, besides fighting and develop the system, they made a lot of propaganda, you know.
Yeah, there was a lot of videos, and I guess, too, maybe the whole Gracie challenge really was the thing that, you know, I guess maybe not as a tournament, but really kind of to win people over, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
To their gym, from their martial art. You know, I guess when someone from, say, karate came into a Gracie Academy and just got worked, and, you know, hopefully, you know, the Gracies would clean up and take their students because they realized their martial art was better.
Yeah, no, that's the way they found to, you know, to show people how good was their system. It was to challenge other martial arts. That's the way they found easier from the beginning, because in the beginning, there was only them. They couldn't go to competition. There was not much other things to do besides, you know, to maybe fight against other systems. They used to fight a lot against capoeira, you know, in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Capoeira, there was a lot of capoeira in Rio de Janeiro. And capoeira is also a Brazilian art, you know, very rich, you know. It has a long history. And so they had a lot of fights back then.
And what was in the practical sense, how did capoeira even in match up with Brazilian jiu-jitsu? I mean, I can see, you know, with it being acrobatic and everything, how someone, you know, would just really, you know, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy would just really try to ground him and, you know, not let them play their game.
Yeah, no, normally that's what mostly happened. But, you know, capoeira, there's a lot of tough people. You know, all the martial arts have really tough people, you know. And so basically, you know, in the beginning, they, you know, I believe capoeira also, you know, didn't accept, you know, that maybe other arts was better and they want to prove the same thing. But I guess jiu-jitsu did pretty good. And yeah.
But would you agree, I guess maybe at that point in time, Brazil was kind of looking for a martial art really to kind of, you know, take hold of and call their own, and everyone was kind of jockeying for position to be the martial art?
No, I think everything happened naturally. I even think that even the Gracies, when, you know, jiu-jitsu started, was by accident, you know. Maeda came and offered to teach the son of Gastão. I think everything happened naturally, accidentally, in the beginning. After a while, then, yes, they, you know, they got a direction And then they just got really strong on that direction. You know, they came to the United States and, you know, but in the beginning, I think everything started naturally.
Yeah, well, I mean, even, you know, from some of the things I've read, you know, in jiu-jitsu leaving Japan, you know, was because, you know, they didn't get to train the military because they lost that battle to judo. From where, you know, they had a competition between, you know, judo and jiu-jitsu to find out who was going to train the army. And I think it was like judo won.
Well, I think that the Japanese people, they start immigrating, you know, out of the country. And among those immigrants, there was a lot of people that knew Japanese martial arts. And then, you know, it was not really part of a plan, you know. And then they start teaching overseas. And then after a while, probably when they establish the organizations, you know, the judo, the karate, the jiu-jitsu, and then they start to send people in purpose to, you know, to teach the art overseas. But in the beginning, it was not planned. I don't think it was planned.
Mm-hmm. So what was Maeda? He was fighting, I know you said he was part of the circus, but he was fighting, you know, bigger guys for the circus or fighting them for real? What was he doing in the circus?
Maeda in the circus was doing a show with his friend. I believe the name of the friend was Sataki. They used to do demonstration in the circus because it looks very exotic, you know. In the circus, you have the animals and the shows, and you have these two guys from Asia, which was not very common in Brazil to have guys, and they knew something. Imagine how strange was that system. They throw each other and show all those moves. And in the end of every show, they ask if there was anybody in the audience that wants to take a challenge. And once in a while, there was somebody, and they just finished the guy, you know, with the throws and the submissions. And it was something very, you know, circus, you know, back in the 1900s. That was something interesting that people like to see. And that was, Maeda probably was trying to earn a living, you know, and see the country. And maybe he was interested in staying. He ended up staying there. And he, according what books and things that we know now, Maeda had traveled. He was in Cuba. He was in the United States, in Europe many times. And he was a world traveler. You know, he was a very interesting character. I believe even that the Gracies inherit a lot of his ideas of challenging people, you know, because he was doing that back then, you know.
That's like the whole Gracie combative structure, right?
Yes. It seems that they inherit those ideas and develop and then took another level with time.
Yeah, because I read somewhere also that at first the Gracies didn't want to spread that martial art to people that weren't within the Gracie family.
No, I never heard those stories.
Yeah.
You know?
I heard some of the same that there was only certain techniques that were really reserved for only members of the family. I mean, they taught as much as they wanted to teach, and there was yet to a point where either if you weren't Brazilian or a part of the family, you know, you were not going to get the full, we weren't going to get all the details and stuff.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, there's a lot of stories out there. We don't know, you know, what's real or not.
Well, I mean, at that time, I can kind of understand, you know, their, you know, point of view on that end at the time. They were still developing their sport. Nowadays, I don't think it's like that anymore. I think, you know, everybody is really into sharing information. Just look at now. To give you an example, last night's UFC, Bahara's pulled just a nice heel hook. It's just a wicked heel hook. And you go this morning on YouTube, and there's five videos right off the bat of different people already trying to show you how to do that same heel hook.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now talking about the mixed martial arts, I believe that in mixed martial arts, that propaganda that was made before saying that 90% of the fights finish on the ground, right now we can see is not true anymore. It's 50-50, you know, because the grapplers, they know how to strike, and the strikers know how to grapple. So I see a lot of the fights, I may be wrong, finishing knockouts now, harder than submission. So mixed martial arts, it's a 50-50 thing, which is very good for mixed martial arts, you know, because you can see that everybody has a chance. A guy from any style, a kickboxer, a karate guy like Lyoto, they can go learn a couple other systems, make their own mix, and go there and do good. So it makes mixed martial arts attracted to everybody to watch. It's not one thing, oh, only the grappler's going to win. No, a kickboxer, a taekwondo guy can win with a kick, a elbow, a punch. So mixed martial arts is very attractive more than ever because of that. You know, it shows people, oh, everybody can win, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carl, I mean, tell him about Barbosa's kick last night.
It almost falls to what he's saying, that everybody, if you're going to be, especially you talk about UFC, those guys are elite level athletes. You got to train in everything. I mean, but you were a mixed martial artist because you had, you know, two different disciplines under your belt, right?
Yes, I mean, so, I never fought in mixed martial arts, but yes, I'm qualified.
Well, Vale Dudo, isn't that like mixed martial arts?
Yeah. Accidentally, I did, you know, striking, grappling.
Well, I bet you had an advantage then, huh, in those open sessions?
Yes, I believe that, you know, the new mentality now is that you have to mix, you have to know other things. You cannot be stuck in one system only. Maybe you start in one system, do that one system for many years until you master. But if you wanna just to be a good professional and knows about everything, you gotta train other things, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of, you know, it breaks the, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm sure because you've been training for so many years, you do the same thing, you get a little tired sometimes, you get a little burned out. You know, and some of us, you know, we have the things we like. You know, myself personally, I love to roll in a gi all the time. And, you know, sometimes I want to go no gi or do a little something different just to, you know, keep things fresh.
No, yeah, this is a whole new era now. It's the mixed martial arts era. You know, in United States, in the history of martial arts in the United States, we had three different chapters. The first one was the point fighting karate era, mm-hmm. which was late 50s through the 60s up to 1974. There was the point fight time, which we had guys like Chuck Norris, Joey Lewis, Mike Stone. They used to be the guys, you know. In 1974, they had the first American full contact competition on TV. And we started there, the kickboxing era. And the names used to be Ben Urquidis, B. Wallace, Joey Lewis. Up from 1974 to 1994, when we had the first UFC. So we had the point fighting era, the kickboxing era, and now we have the mixed martial arts era. Those times normally lasted around 20 years. Okay, mm-hmm. The time we've been going through right now is the mixed martial arts time. Really, I believe it started not in 94, because from 94 to around 98, 99, it was really jiu-jitsu time, because everybody thought about, oh, we have to learn jiu-jitsu. But now we know that it's not enough jiu-jitsu anymore. You have to know other things. So I believe mixed martial arts really started at the end of the 90s. And if you follow the steps of the other two eras in the last 20 years, it goes up to, you know, close to 2020. I mean, I don't know. It could be longer because it's very big. It's very popular and mm-hmm. it's on TV all the time and everybody knows about it. But there is a lot of things in mixed martial arts that have similarity with boxing in the late 80s, which is, it was very popular, but boxing didn't grow as a number of people. Everybody knew the name of Mike Tyson. Everybody watched the fights. Everybody talked about it. But people was not really doing boxing.
Yeah, you have a bunch of people signing up at gyms and stuff to do boxing, right? It's still a small community.
Yeah. So mixed martial arts, it's kind of a little bit like that. It's really big as a show, but the numbers of people, of course, are growing, but it's very slow. Brazilian jiu-jitsu, yes, that one is growing a lot, okay? Brazilian jiu-jitsu, 20 years ago, had a few 100,000 people. Now they say they have 2 million, okay? It's still very small if you compare with Taekwondo, which has 45 million, mm-hmm. the Olympic sport. Karate has about half, 22, 23 million. But Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has two, but it's pretty growing pretty fast, mm-hmm. okay? Also, what happened with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is that has a uniform, a gi, and a belt. And that attracts more people. People is more attracted to arts that wear a gi and a belt. Karate, Taekwondo, Judo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And people is less attracted to arts that they don't wear a gi. Boxing, wrestling, Thai boxing. They don't have a belt and a gi. They still great, phenomenal arts. MMA, I can put MMA on that, you know, section. But people really like to go and have the uniform and the belt and do the traditional. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu following that pattern. So Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has a big future.
And now, kind of going back a little bit, open, you know, having your own school in Brazil and everything and, you know, doing that. What was it like making a transition when you came here to the United States?
I got in the United States in June of 1989. And I remember very well. When I came to Los Angeles, I was in New York for a little bit, and I came to Los Angeles. There was absolutely no jiu-jitsu. Only there was in Torrance, California, three guys, Horion, Royce, and Hickson. That's why 1989, that's it. And then after there was the Machado Brothers. There was no more jiu-jitsu. You can drive to Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, Culver City, anywhere. There was nothing.
So that was before Carlson Sr. was here then, huh?
Yes, yes. And so 20 years later now, that's all what people talk about now. I saw the whole thing change slowly.
When you got here, you know, looking for training, obviously, you know, jiu-jitsu wasn't big here yet. Did you find a lot of good taekwondo training when you got here?
Okay, what happened to the taekwondo here? You find good schools, but there is also not good schools. There is a lot of commercial schools. And yeah, that's a problem with taekwondo. We can even talk about that. Taekwondo, like I said, has 45 million people in the planet. It's a huge martial art. It's the most popular. It's in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you have a style growing that much, it becomes very commercial. That can happen with any other style. Judo in late 50s, early 60s went through the same problem. It was not as big, but it got big and you start losing control. Same happened a little bit with karate in the 70s. Taekwondo, it's very commercial and it's a target. A lot of people criticize Taekwondo and they are right in criticizing because the one that Taekwondo that I do is the Olympic Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. We use mostly kicking. Little bit punching. And it's so popular. It's schools in every corner. So it's very easy to people talk about, oh, Taekwondo is not good. And in fact, Taekwondo is a good martial art. And it's specialized in kicking. You know, like, you know, different martial arts are specialized in different things. Let's say if we have a combat sport like boxing, they are specialized in hands. They don't kick. They don't grapple. It's just punching. Okay? You cannot go and say, oh, boxing has no kicks, it's no good. You cannot do that, it's not fair. It's not fair when you say, oh, Taekwondo only kicks. They don't punch much, they don't have grappling on it. You know, you cannot do that. You cannot go, oh, Judo is no good because they don't kick. No, Taekwondo does a lot of kicking, boxing, a lot of punching, Jiu-Jitsu, grappling, wrestling, they throw more, Judo, they throw. So the problem is not that we don't punch or we grapple. The problem is that we are very big and very popular and very commercial. That's why people criticize. Mm-hmm. If tomorrow, let's say Aikido has 40 million people, it's going to be criticized too. If Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has 45 million people doing, it's going to be very commercial.
Well, it almost seems, you know, and some people will say it dilutes the sport because even we're kind of seeing it now with the growth in our own schools, you know, and around, you know, people are caught up by the belt system. You know, prices for jiu-jitsu training is going through the roof and it's changing and everyone's trying to find, you know, their way to $1 million and you know, I wouldn't say it's hurting our sport. I don't know, but it's definitely changing the atmosphere of the sport.
But totally true.
Do you think that's the commercialization of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, what, you know, some of the things that Rich described? Because obviously now you can go to Torrance where your Taekwondo Academy is and find, you know, 10 other Brazilian jiu-jitsu schools now, right?
Oh, maybe 20.
Yeah, maybe yeah. 20, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty close together. So it's like, yeah. I mean, do you see that happening with jiu-jitsu now where you get people wanting to charge so much money for sport? Because how was it back in Brazil? Like when you went to school to sign up?
When I was a teenager in Brazil, there was not that much jiu-jitsu in Brazil, only in Rio de Janeiro. Rio is the Mecca. So always they had, since the 70s, 80s, they always had some you know, good jiu-jitsu in many schools. But in the other cities around the country, you may have one or two schools. Jiu-jitsu exploded really big in Brazil when early 90s we had the UFC. When it got big here and then exploded there, they already had, you know, everything set up there. The best Brazilian jiu-jitsu master from Brazil, they move all of them, almost all of them are in the United States. So United States has a very big future in jiu-jitsu. You know, the top masters from Brazil are here. Now they are going to Europe. They are in Asia. The thing is growing very rapidly. We're starting to have children in jiu-jitsu. You know, before children wouldn't go to karate, judo, and taekwondo. Now we are starting to answer the phone at the martial arts school and people asking, oh, do we have kids class? Mm-hmm. They don't call for MMA. You know, a lot of people is really, oh, MMA for my little daughter? No, not at all. They don't want. Like I told you, MMA is kind of like boxing, you know. It's very big, very popular. We know the names of the guys. There is not a lot of people signing up for real MMA hardcore. They do fitness MMA in a few places.
Yeah.
But what's big in MMA is the Ultimate Fighting Show, but not really the art. It's not growing in a amateur level. Like
I think it's growing fans, but not athletes like you know. We thought it would.
Exactly. It's going like boxing. I mean, mm-hmm. It's going like the name is big, the fan base is giant, but the number of people in fact doing it is small. What's growing is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
But do you think that's also because if you trained MMA, you're more likely to get hurt, right? So the longevity, you know, you talk like a martial art, like a traditional one, like Taekwondo, right? If you do a lot of techniques, or I don't know if they call them katas in Taekwondo, but if you do that, you really don't get that hurt. But if you're training, the only way to train for a fight is to be in a fight.
Right.
I mean, yes. You can't punch a shadow 100 times and be a great fight. I mean, you got to get punched in the face if you want to.
Yes. And most people, they don't want to be punched in the face all the time. Like I said, people are really more attracted to semi-contact arts. You know, I classify jiu-jitsu one semi-contact art. Taekwondo, of course, karate, judo with the uniform. Those are the things that grow big. When you have something full contact is when they can kick and punch to the face. That's full contact. So Thai boxing, you know, American full contact. And MMA, you can get punch and kick. In Taekwondo, you can get kicked to the face. Karate is the same. You can get kicked to the face. You can make a knockout. But you cannot really punch to the face full power. You know, we have to just touch or just punch to the body. Those are semi-contact. People love that. It's safe. It's, you know, they go through the discipline, the belt system. It's good for kids, you know, for women, for adults. But when you talk about full contact, you're talking about men between 20 and 30 years old, you know.
And just kind of to compare the two atmospheres of the different martial arts, is Taekwondo the type of sport where a lot of it is, you know, kind of real formal as far as like, you know, the way it is between teacher student, and is there like a lot of discipline in katas? And
yes, they have the, you know, the belt system. Each belt, you, for example, you're a beginner, white belt, you're going to land the five base kicks. It's a front kick, side kick, roundhouse kick, back kick, and X kick. You land one form or kata, okay? And a few other things. It's like going to school, first grade, second grade. Each grade, in the first grade, you learn the ABC. And then second grade, you can write little words. And you know, when you get higher in Taekwondo, you learn jumping kicks, flying there, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's very, you know, it's slow, the learning. And it's very formal. And that's what attracts people. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu give that impression when you see the uniform and, you know, so I have a big, you know, good feeling about the future of Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. But MMA is not like that.
Maybe the impression, but I kind of think actually it lacks a lot of that formality that other martial arts have, where, you know, coaches are kind of addressed, you know, by their first names. People are kind of, you know, talking on the mat is encouraged. I said this before, and I'm always going to say it because it sticks out to me about this sport. And this is the reason why I chose, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is because it's it's a matter, the movements and technique is a matter of interpretation. I think, you know, there's more than one way to do an armbar. There's adjustments. There's ways to do it where a lot of martial arts is, there's one way and it's right, or if it's not, it's wrong, and that's it.
Yeah. And what he's saying is very interesting. The formality in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, yes, is not the same of karate or taekwondo because of the Brazilian thing, you know, because it's Brazilian. Brazilians, they are not like the Japanese, you know, formal. They bow, they don't even touch, they don't even shake hands. So in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is you are in contact with somebody, you know, somebody in between your legs on your guard, you know. So that is not the same formality, you know.
But you can see some of the Japanese influences. Like if you go to like a Gracie Academy, you have to wear, you know, a Gracie gi, and, you know, they all have their patches in the same place. Very similar to like a Taekwondo place, I would assume, right?
Yes, yes. You know, yeah, I mean, I believe, you know, some schools, they are more formal than others. I know a lot of guys that they do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and the class has a beginning and an end. They bow, everybody get in line, bow, and when the time finish, they bow again. And I know other places that I train that there is no beginning. We know that's 6 o'clock, but people keep training, and then 3 hours later, there's still people there, and the class didn't finish, you know?
Yeah.
there's no formality on that.
What do you think is better, though?
I believe it's formality. Yeah. I think, I mean, you don't have to have a lot of formality, but it makes more official. And somebody come to a class, and let's say it's an hour and a half, you're going to start at 8, you know, and then 9:30 finish. Everybody get together, bow, and then leave.
Yeah, we bow before class, and we bow after class.
I think that's a very good thing, good thing.
Yeah.
But I train in places before that, you know, we show up at 6 o'clock and, you know, we start training. And then, you know, at 9, people are still there, talking, rolling. So that's the same class, basically.
Well, so tell us also, we're going back, you know, you're here in the United States. The only ones that are here really training were you know, the Gracies. Through that time, how did you end up meeting with the Machados?
Okay, when I came here, you know, got in Los Angeles, I left Brazil in 88. I went to Europe to compete in Taekwondo. I was in Europe for about a year and a half. I left Brazil in February of 88, and I came to LA June of 89. And then when I came here, I was starting to apply for a green card at that time. Today I'm an American citizen, but at that time I had to apply for a green card to stay here. And then I went to Santa Monica to this lawyer's office. And when I sit on the chair, I look, there was a guy there, you know, and the guy looked Brazilian. And then I look at him and I kind of recognize him as one of the Machado brothers. And he kept looking at me too. And he said, oh, you are the Taekwondo guy. And I said, oh, you are the Jiu-Jitsu guy. Uh-huh. And then that was Joe Machado. He's one of the Machado brothers, 5 brothers. And then he told me, oh, we just opened our place. And I told him, oh, I did jiu-jitsu in Brazil. You know, I did close to 2 years, and I'm looking forward to do it again because I didn't train in Europe. There was no jiu-jitsu there, you know. So then I start training back with the Machados. And when I came to the academy, you know, we just developed this friendship, you know, overnight. And then I was a few years later working as a writer for those magazines inside karate, inside taekwondo. Eventually they had Grappling magazine, which I work in the first couple of years. And so the Machados had Chuck Norris training with them, you know, and they brought me to the same classes that Chuck Norris used to take with them. Normally I used to go Saturday morning. Chuck Norris was there. I took a lot of photos. I have a lot of photos of that time. And they introduced me to Chuck Norris. And it was a really fun time, man. Like, Chuck was a phenomenal guy. He, you know, was a very loyal student of the Machados in Jiu-Jitsu. And I was part of the whole thing back then, you know?
Yeah, pictures were expensive back then because you had to take them to the store to get developed, right?
Yes.
I think it's funny. You look at pictures and you take that for granted because now you get a digital camera and you take 100. But, you know, back then you're like, oh, man, I only got 4 left. I better choose which ones I want to take.
Yeah, no, what's funny now is that we can take photos with the telephone.
Yeah.
We can film, take photos, everything with the telephone. Back then, none of that. You know?
You wanted to take more pictures of Chuck Norris's mustache? So he's a pretty nice guy, huh?
Chuck Norris is a very down-to-earth guy, very simple guy, great martial artist, very respectful. And, you know, it was a great experience to meet him. Met him a few times in the Machado Academy. One time he took all the Machados to Las Vegas because Chuck is head of one like Tang Soo Do organization. You know, it's a Korean system that he's the head, you know, of the organization. He took the Machados there, and I was in the airplane to pay my ticket, hotel, everything. And the Machados went in Vegas to do a seminar for all the black belts in his organization from all over the country. Mm-hmm. Also, I took so many photos of the event. It was a phenomenal experience.
What was his discipline? What was Chuck Norris's discipline?
Chuck Norris, I believe in the 50s, he was in the Korean War, or a little after the Korean War, he was in Korea, and he learned Tang Soo Do. It's a old form of a Korean system. Mm-hmm. And when he came back to the U.S., he also did karate, and eventually he did a Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So, and when he used to teach, was Tang Soo Do. Chuck, back in the 70s, 15 schools here in California, him and one of his partners, the name is Bob Wall. I don't know if you guys heard, Bob Wall was a karate champion. He is in one of Bruce Lee movies. He breaks a bottle and Bruce Lee does a sidekick on him and he falls on the chairs. You probably saw that movie before. So Bob Wall was Chuck Norris' partner, and they own several schools. And there's a couple of them, they're still in business, owned by different people now. There's one in Beverly Hills. Now it's Jun Chang Taekwondo. And there's another one, Marina Del Rey, owned by somebody else. You know, there's two around.
How about Bruce Lee? Was he, everyone calls him the grandfather of MMA.
Bruce Lee, I have my opinions on Bruce Lee. When I was a teenager, I didn't like Bruce Lee much. I watched the movies and I said, I don't think, you know, anybody can do any Taekwondo can do those kicks and everything. But then when I grow old, I realized that Bruce Lee, it was a lot of things together. It was not only, you know, he was a good martial artist. He was not a guy that would kill 10 people like some fans imagine. He was right. Normal, good martial artist.
Yeah.
You know, he was not a killer, you know. He was a normal guy, you know, and a good martial artist. He was very smart. He knew how to speak, to give interviews, to write articles. And he did the movies early on, and the movies took off. You know, he had a unique look. And, you know, his movies was the first martial arts movies that really went worldwide. And the most important thing about Bruce Lee, he died in the right time. If Bruce Lee didn't die at that time, he was not going to be the Bruce Lee we know, like a symbol, you know, like bigger than life. Yeah. You know, in the United States, a lot of people, James Dean, Elvis Presley, there is people here that when they die in a certain time, they become immortal, you know. And I think that happened to Bruce Lee. He died and we have the image of him at 30 years old, looking like he's 20, doing all those, you know, different noises and martial arts. But Bruce Lee is not a guy that will come in the UFC and beat the people. Well, Definitely not.
But do you think... Obviously, we talk about propaganda. Obviously, he knew how to do that because he can speak well and he articulated himself very well. But why do you feel like if he was alive today, he wouldn't be that great? Do you think some of the stuff he was doing with, like, you know, they always talk about this two-inch punch or something?
Jim Mock or, you know.
I think Bruce Lee, he made, what, 5 movies, I think, or 6? He made only very few movies, okay? And he was... successful in a time, it was the late 60s, early 70s, okay? He came with some new ideas. And he died before we couldn't test him or question him. He was not really tested and questioned, okay? And then I believe even Jean-Claude Van Damme, if he had died after his fourth or fifth movie, people would say he was the new Bruce Lee. okay, mm-hmm. when he did blood sport, kickboxer, right in the beginning, okay? You know, but, and that's what happened with Bruce Lee. We did not have time to test him, you know? He was probably being involved in scandals and fights, and, you know, he was not going to be able to beat up everybody.
Well, I think, too, maybe people were more in love, with his persona and his image, because actually, I think maybe a good example of that is, look at how many people are following Jeet Kune Do today.
Yes, it's not a giant following. But, I mean, it's a great, great system. And Bruce Lee, I think the main thing about Bruce Lee, besides dying the right time, you know, to be immortal, Bruce Lee was a very smart guy, you know. He had these ideas about, you know, I don't have a system, I have all the systems, you know. Be water, my friend, you know. Things that was different from the time. And through the decades, it became really real, you know. The things he talked about, you know, having all the systems is what it is right now, mixed martial arts, you know. He was not the inventor of mixed martial arts, but he came out with the idea, you know. And I bet there was a lot of the people that came out with that idea that we don't know about it. Even my taekwondo teacher in Brazil, early in the 1980-81, he was telling me about, oh, you have to do other things. And it was not a thing that other schools of taekwondo in my city like, you know. There was a time, 60s, 70s, even early 80s, if you do a discipline and you go train another discipline, it was a crime. You know, people look at you, oh, a traitor. You know, the guy is a karate guy. Why he's doing judo? It didn't look good, you know. It was not normal. Now it is normal. If you don't do it, is that, oh, why don't, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that go from gym to gym to gym. So, I mean, it's just, I guess it boils down to where the Asian martial arts has a sense of pride and honor and integrity. And it seems like, you know, a lot of that's gone in certain martial arts, but...
I think like what you were saying, you know, it was the natural progression, you know, it was things kind of came together naturally. And I guess, you know, maybe it was a matter of time when everything was going to come together.
Yeah. And it's society today, everything with time gets more open. Mm-hmm. For example, in the 50s and 60s, you didn't see women doing martial arts. In the 70s, they started doing. Now there's a lot of women doing martial arts.
Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of ideas that we have after 20 years, they just get more acceptable. You know, the thing about doing more than one style, it was a crime at one time. It was not a good thing to do. Now it's normal.
Right.
You know, but it's still people out there that don't accept. They just want, I know a lot of taekwondo guys, friends of mine, they only do taekwondo and they don't want anything to do with any other thing, you know?
Yeah.
When I tell them about it, they kind of don't like it, so.
Well, you have a woman instructor at your academy as well, right?
Several, you know. My wife is the top one, and we have a lot of women teaching and a lot of women training. Taekwondo is a style that attracts a lot of women. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of women have, you know, taekwondo is a style that if you practice a lot, it's very aerobic. You lose weight, you get skinny. And a lot of people like that, to be skinny and flexible. Mm-hmm. You know, there is styles that you, like jiu-jitsu, you get a little bit stronger, you know, your shoulders, your chest, because you pull and push a lot.
Your ears.
Yes. Yeah, there is martial arts, you know, that the same guy, if you get into, like, say, karate, a lot of punching and kicking too, you may even get a little more muscular, heavier. And there is styles that make you more skinny. Taekwondo is one of them because it's very acrobatic. Speed is very important to do many times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You sweat a lot, and so it's attract to a lot of people.
But, you know, we were talking about how you said there's always an era for each, you know, martial art. Like, how do you think the Taekwondo survived, you know, the era? Because you've been doing it for how many years now? 30?
33, I think.
Right. So how come, obviously, you got a couple successful schools.
Yes, yes.
And so how do you survive that era by still keeping students coming in? Is it the tradition of Taekwondo, or how does that stay afloat?
I believe Taekwondo, the reason of the success in terms of, you know, being popular and has a lot of people following, is first, it is a style that attracts a lot of children, because really for children, it's better to do judo, karate, and Taekwondo, in my opinion, than more sophisticated like arts like kickboxing, you know, because it's a semi-contact. And it's very flashy. That's one of the things that attract people, the jumping and the flying, because you see that in movies. The most thing you see in movies is like jump kicks, you know? Kicking attracts people. It looks very good. And when you have a knockout with a spinning kick, it's maybe better than a triangle, you know? Oh, yeah. I've seen the guy spinning in the air, hitting the face, falling. That's like more spectacular.
Yeah, because it's rare.
Yeah, and so I believe that's the fact that Taekwondo attracts people. First, it's flash. Another thing, commercial. A lot of places you can get a black belt in 3 years, okay? And when you get a black belt in 3 years, you can teach 100 people, let's say 20 get a black belt. Few of them will open more schools fast, because in 3 years you can get a black belt. Maybe after 2 years you open your own school. So it spreads rapidly. Korea made so much propaganda, they managed to have Taekwondo into the Olympics, which was a very good step. They spend a lot of money making propaganda of it. So I think that's the reason, you know, like right now we have the biggest propaganda is on MMA, okay? But the thing is, can MMA form schools of MMA, like, you know, and get black belts in MMA? We don't have that. It's different.
Well, I know so, the UFC is trying with their UFC gyms, yet you hear that some of them are not even, there are no contact schools, and, yeah, and they're teaching MMA.
Honestly, I have a couple of friends of mine. They are Taekwondo champions. They are teaching at the UFC gym, and they teach in Taekwondo. The only thing they don't do is the forms. They have a uniform, says UFC in the back, and they teach regular Olympic Taekwondo for the kids, no forms. And they are teaching jiu-jitsu too, you know, well, which I think for kids would be a very good mix.
Yeah, but isn't the forms part, like the basic part of Taekwondo, don't you like, isn't that the essence of the art?
Yeah, it's a very big part of Taekwondo, but in the UFC gym, they really, it's a commercial thing. They want to call UFC, and, you know, we know it's a business thing, you know. Yeah. There is people signing up on the UFC gym thinking, oh, I'm gonna train here, and in a few years I'm gonna fight in the UFC, you know, and that's not gonna happen. We know that.
Well, hopefully first before anything, that we get Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to the Olympics and grow the sport even more.
Yes, yeah, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is gonna take time, but it is going in a very solid direction, you know. It got a lot more, you know, people and organization, and they're using a lot of things that was used only at the martial arts. Like they have now the screens when you compete with the points.
Yeah.
So when the guy passes the guy, you see the points right there. If you do a throw, you see 2 points. So they rapidly developing, and they are the ones who really gonna gain the most of this mixed martial art era. It is.
Well, you see the IBJJF trying to form a federation where everybody has the same rules.
So there's
those disparities and stuff, right? So they have the same rules and timing and.
Yes.
Because I was reading the rule book and I didn't know this, but the ref's not allowed to talk to you. You know, in jiu-jitsu, like the ref's allowed to, you know, say a couple, I think it's 2 or 3 or maybe 3 or 4 words and that's it.
Yeah, because IBJJF did change the rules again. You know, I guess they kind of said they reverted back to an older, you know, form of the rules they were using before, which is going to start, you know, mandating this year in competition.
Yes, I mean, and if you see jiu-jitsu growing, when any art grows, okay, jiu-jitsu is still small, but it's getting big fast. There is criticism, okay, like they criticize Taekwondo for several reasons. Jiu-jitsu, once you get big, there will be people pointing fingers. Right now, there is already people pointing fingers. They have this new thing called no-gi, okay? Mm-hmm. And they are claiming, oh, the gi is not good because you don't wear a gi in a fight. So they are already criticizing jiu-jitsu. But one very funny thing that I see, you know, I sometimes do no-gi. I love no-gi. You know, I love all the martial arts, okay? But I want to comment in one thing. The biggest competition in no-gi is Abu Dhabi.
Yep.
They have a big exposure. They pay some money. You know, you go there and win. You everywhere in the internet. Okay, the funny thing is that's a no-gi competition. But all the champions, almost all the champions, first, second, and bronze, they are gi fighters. So how come no-gi is better if the biggest event they have, the gi grapplers, mostly all Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, they take all the first, second, and third place. Yeah. How come it's better? You understand? I believe actually it's the opposite. I think jiu-jitsu is better than no-gi. And I think the gi is the advantage of jiu-jitsu because the gi and the belt attract a lot more people, you know, children and everything. They, like I said before, people like arts with the uniform and the belt. So, and no-gi, it's a phenomenal. A lot of people in jiu-jitsu do no-gi, but it does not attract as many people.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's very different. I think gi makes your no-gi game stronger because with a gi, you grab a gi. And when you go no-gi, you don't have the ability to grab a gi, so you have to grab the actual opponent, which I think, makes your game better. At least I think so.
And also with gi, you learn a lot of moves that the guy with no gi cannot do it because they don't have a gi, you know, chokes and things that will wear the gi. So when you do gi, you know more moves. I think the guy who has a gi, easier will adapt to no gi than a guy with no gi to come do training with gi will have a harder time. He's going to have to learn a lot of new movements.
Yeah. I think it helps everybody in the whole sport, gi and no gi, because too, with the no gi, then you start to bring a lot of like the wrestlers start to come in and then, you know, they use wrestling movements and then it kind of merges and it changes the jiu-jitsu game some. And then, you know, and then they take that and then they go try to use some of it with the gi. And I think everybody's helping everybody. It's a win-win for everybody on that end.
Yeah, the no-gi is especially good for people who do MMA, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And when you do no-gi, you can, you know, dedicate to like more leg locks and other things that maybe in jiu-jitsu we don't do as much,
yeah.
You know. So it's a win-win situation, yes.
Yeah, so what do you think about testing in Abu Dhabi?
What do you mean?
Like drug testing for performance-enhancing drugs.
It is, I believe that, you know, all the arts, you know, when they have special international competition, you need to have drug test.
I just think it's odd because obviously maybe it's because we're in the jiu-jitsu circle and it comes up, but like you've never heard about that in taekwondo tournaments, right? Like,
oh, there is drug
there
test
is, really?
And there is people cut a lot.
There is.
Oh, really? There is, yes. Even in the juniors division now, we see people 15, 17 getting cut using.
When the guy kicks through a wall, you're like, man, we may want to test that guy.
Yeah, what happened? Taekwondo is based on speed, you know, Olympic Taekwondo. And so they need a very strong physical training. You know, you have to be as fast as you can. It's really based on speed. A lot of martial arts these days are really based on speed. Used to be relay a lot in technique. And today, yeah, it's still relay in technique. But the people are so fast and strong now, you know, because they have all this. Everybody has a trainer, you know. They have all this.
Strength and conditioning.
Yeah, CrossFit, kettlebells, all kinds of preparation now.
Yeah.
So people, you know, if you are really good, but you come in the ring and you get tired, forget it, you know. If you don't have a good endurance, power, speed, you know. So it's very difficult, you know, way more difficult than it used to be.
And do you feel that, you know, all those other things, the strength and conditioning, are they a real big benefit? Or do you feel it kind of, it stresses or it makes people overtrain? And
what do you mean? I didn't.
You know, do you feel that, like, using the strength and conditioning and the CrossFit to involve it into your martial arts program, do you feel it's a really big help? Or do you feel that it tends to make people overtrain and you know, get hurt?
Well, what I think, I can make an observation about what we do, martial arts in general today, is that we train martial arts to get stronger, more confident, to get a better person, okay? Physically, mentally. But the way we are doing now is almost unhealthy, you know? There is a lot of fighters that 50s, they need knee replacement, hip, because they did the repetition millions of times, you know. You have to train so much more now to be able to be on competition level internationally that the body almost cannot take it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, because the bones, they can, you know, just move. There is a number, you know, of times that you can do the movement. Mm-hmm. Passing that number, you're going to have a problem on your knee. Okay. Right. Of course, the medicine is where it's better now. They can fix things faster and better and more precise. But the way we do in martial arts now, it's almost, you know, when you compete international level, it's almost unhealthy. You have to push to a limit that, you know, you have a perfect food to eat, you know, you have, you know, to trained so many hours with a trainer, plyometrics and flexibility and this and that. It's very difficult for these guys to stay on top for so long. The life of MMA fighter is small, is short, you know. It's difficult to stay there and keep winning, you know. You're going to get knocked down. We all know that all of them going to be knocked down if they don't retire, you know, at one point.
Well, like Fedor, you know, right? I mean, everyone talks about how great he was, but...
Yes.
He's a prime example, a guy who went a little too long, and then his, you know, his aura just died, right?
Yes, I mean, I remember... Wanderlei Silva, he was like 5 or 6 years in Pride. He didn't lose 5 or 6 years, you know. And now it's difficult for him to win the fights, you know.
Well, you know, yeah, well, he's getting older and just like you said, you know, injuries catch up with you and stuff. And,
yeah, it's the life of an MMA fighter, it's short.
It's not always fun, and at times it can be miserable with training and weight cutting and you know what's involved in exactly in keeping that level.
And another thing that I would like to make a comment is, back in the late 80s when boxing was on top, Mike Tyson was the king. He was making 20 million a fight, you know, 25 million. And right now I see MMA really huge, you know, and I don't see anybody making 20 million. You know, I hear of people making 10, 20, and once in a while there is a guy that goes and make $1 million. Yes, there is two or three of them. You can count on your hand.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of guys. Mostly are making 50, 80, 100,000, yep. Which is better than go and fight for a medal in martial arts tournament, of course. But we don't see the money getting to the athletes. And the life they have is way shorter than a boxer used to do. You know, a boxer used to fight once or twice a year. Make $20 million, the top guys, De La Hoya, Mike Tyson, and we have guys now in MMA as famous as them, and they are not making the $20 million. I don't understand.
Well, look, I think Jose Aldo, who won his fight last night, I think he only made $130,000.
Yes.
You know,
that's a lot of money in Brazil, though.
Oh, in Brazil, well, you know what? Brazilian money now, it's 2-1. It used to be 8, 6. Yeah, because, you know, Brazil, India, and China, economically, they are growing like giants, you know, especially China. So the money is stronger, too. So it's not what it used to be, okay? There's people from Brazil that come on vacation now. You know, I've been here. Friends that come on vacation, they go buy a lot of stuff, and they tell me, oh, it's so cheap here. I never heard that in my life. A Brazilian come here, buy all kinds of things, and say it's cheap. Before 10, 15 years ago, people come here, I may buy one or two things, really careful about the price. Now, so the money over there is like 2-1.
So I got a question for you. So do you think, how many times is too many times to train? Like in your Taekwondo classes, when you have people sign up,
do they
train like twice a week, four times a week, five times a week, or is it different because the martial art is different?
Yeah, no, I have a very... precise opinion about this. It doesn't have to be Taekwondo, any martial arts. If you want to learn and, you know, in a good pace, and you go 3 times a week for any martial arts school, that's a fitness level, okay? But if you want to be a champion, you need to train 2 hours a day, 5 times a week. You need 10 hours a week, no doubts. You need to go, you can take 2 days off. It could be Saturday, Sunday, or can be a Wednesday and a Sunday. But you need 5 days, and you need 2 hours a day. You need 10 hours, any style today, to, you know, if you want to compete and get to the international level. If you get to international level, you're going to need more than that. But if you want to just, you know, learn the technique well and be in good shape and maybe get a good, you know, black belt one day, the 3 times a week thing is good, okay? But to be a champion, forget it. It's not going to happen.
What if you train 5 times a week and you're still not a champion? Different sport.
It happened to a lot of people.
Or what is it they say? There's no bad students or bad teachers?
I think that many times, you know, the thing of teaching, I heard one thing, it's not bad students, it's bad teachers, you know? And that's one thing you have to look for. You know, the teacher, they have to know some students, they can test them, put them in a training that they're going to be tested, you know, sparring. And there is students that have to be protected until the day they be able to go. And, you know, let's say you are blue belt in jiu-jitsu and you are light. And the teacher maybe should protect you, you know, against the 200 pounds or 240 guys, you know, and protect you until the day you are ready. Oh, this guy is ready now. He got some good skills. He's stronger. He can go and fight those big guys. So the teacher has to know that some students has to be protected and some students need to be tested to grow more, you know. And if you let it go, just fight everybody, spar, and don't look at your students, people is going to get hurt. They're going to leave the school, you know, and, you know, it's not going to be a good result. But to be a teacher is very, is a very delicate situation, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree with that.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, after the Machados, you know, and you receiving your black belt, from then, what was the progression? You were still competing in tournaments at that time?
Or? Yeah, well, I competed in jiu-jitsu mostly when I was a purple belt. All my life was more dedicated to taekwondo, okay? But there was times, yes, that I almost trained taekwondo very little. I did more jiu-jitsu, okay? When it was like 98, 99, 2000, those times I was, you know, 3 or 4 years totally doing jiu-jitsu 2 times a day, 5 days a week, and I competed. But my main focus was in taekwondo, okay? And besides that, I was able to do other things. I did a little bit kickboxing, you know, for a year. But, you know, it was more like, jiu-jitsu was the second style for me always. In a very few times, it was the main thing. And yes, I did with the Machados mostly. And I did with Gerson Sanginito. He's a friend of mine from Barra Gracie. Mm-hmm. And but most of the time I did with Machado. I got my black belt from Higa. And then I got my stripes on my black belt from John Machado. And today we work together. You know, he's a partner in one of the schools in Culver City, and he owns a school in Torrance, also his own school. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, martial arts, you guys do martial arts, it's not only training, it's the friendship and, yes, you know, all the things that go, injuries and the struggle to get better.
Definitely.
And it's always learning. You meet very interesting people. I meet so many interesting people in martial arts, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I meet people, I never saw them in my life. We talk for hour and look like we know each other for 10 years because we have something in common, you know, doing the martial arts and able to talk about the same stuff and be exposed to different ideas. Martial arts is something very complex, you know, there is different ideas, different ways of training, different philosophy. Martial arts schools are different. Sometimes I walk in a martial arts school and once you walk in, I can feel already, oh, here I'm going to have to fight. You know, it's very heavy, you know, this training. And then you walk in another school, it's more formal. You know, the people is, you know, you can see more relaxed atmosphere. Each martial arts school has a different feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. When you visit somebody's school, you can see there's a different feeling. And normally it comes from the teacher, you know. When you have a more aggressive teacher, the students are going to be aggressive. Whoever walks in to visit, there will be a strong fight. When the teacher is more relaxed, you know, the students are also going to be good. But when somebody come in, they come more friendly, you know, they make friendship, they train hard too. But it's a different way, you know. I've been through all kinds of schools, violent schools and friendly and, you know, it commercial, you know, low level technique, you know, all kinds of things.
What do you think is the best, though? What do you think is the best atmosphere for a school to have?
I believe that the school should focus on teaching the people that goes 3 times a week, you know, the fitness people and the people who's really the numbers of the school. And then on the side, they should have a competition team. The competition team should not be bigger than 10% of the school. If you have 100 students, your competition team should be 10. Mm-hmm. Competition, too much competition in any martial arts school will destroy the school. I know a lot of people that, you know, they decided to make their school into a competition school and the percentage of fighters grow from 10 to 20 to 30 to 40. And then suddenly they lose a lot of students. The people who goes 2 or 3 times a week, they're not going to be able to handle that kind of school. They're going to be getting beat up all the time. And so, and then suddenly the school becomes very small. And then the group, you know, that all the fighters, you know, if it's a competition school, at one point they break in pieces. Always after a few years, and they start opening schools right around the corner, pulling students out of the school. So the main way to develop a big martial arts school is fitness school, focus on the people who go three times, get the ones who want to fight on the side, make trainings on the weekends of 3 hours training, put a time for them to train, don't let grow more than 10% the competition team. That kind of school go a long way, and we have good fighters to represent the school in the tournaments.
Do you think let's say a fighter who's 18 or someone who trains that's 18 and someone who trains that has work and family, should they be treated the same, or do you think there's different standards for different people at different stages of their lives?
They could be treated the same if they have the same goals. If the 18 years old guy, let's say, is a college student and he wants to train three times and, you know, do three times, and the family may have the same goals, yes. But if the 18 years old is looking into becoming a fighting champion, at one point, he can train together with the guy who is a family member, but it's not going to be the best training. He's going to get into some kind of a little competition team who there is another 10 guys like him that want to train and maybe go in the weekend and stay 3 or 4 hours.
So what you're really saying is you kind of want to pick your training partners, I guess, more to people that have the same goals as you.
Yes, if they have the same goals. I mean, if you train with somebody, you have different goals. I mean, you want to come 3 days, the guy who trains every day, you want to be a UFC champion. It's not going to be a good training either one.
It makes sense because you're not going to be in the right mindset going against a guy that is just trying to tear you to pieces.
Yes.
Because he always goes hard when you just want to flow. You just want to do some technique.
Yes,
it's not going to be the best training.
Yeah, and a lot of people just want to roll. You know, a lot of people don't know what's roll. Roll is go and roll and have fun. Maybe you tap, maybe you get tap. But you're not desperate to tap somebody 10 times, you know.
Right.
And you research, you know, somebody get you in a move. Oh, what is this? You know, that's what we do, you know, on the daily basis. But when you get, you know, fighters, people that, you know, are in the mindset of competing, they just want to destroy everybody, you know.
Like my coach was saying, he goes, you know, when it comes time to roll, it should be the time where you're practicing new techniques. You're trying to make things work. It shouldn't be a time where you're just getting attacked the whole time and you can't do much because, you know, you want to tear each other up. I mean, it should be the time to practice. You know, time to practice and put yourself in those bad situations that you're not used to being in. You know, give up that position that you've been trying to work on. And, you know, I think that it's true. You're going to get a lot more out of your training by doing that.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we've gone about an hour and 20 minutes now. And so I think before we go, maybe you
We'd like to know, where we can find you.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys can find me at limataekwondo.com, LimaTaekwondo, limataekwondo.com. Can send me an email, and we'll get back to you guys. And it was a pleasure to be here. Had a lot of fun, great experience, and you guys are doing a great job. I think this show is going to grow a lot more, and it's a very good and interesting work that you guys are doing, very important. You're giving to the martial arts community, you know, a lot of different views and information. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate your perspective, you know, on it. And since we've only trained in, you know, myself as Prince of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's good to see another man's point of view, you know, in with your experience and everything. And I'm sure our listeners, would agree as well.
I agree. I got to say, you're very educated you've been doing this a long time, and you're very, you know, you're soft-spoken, and I appreciate your humbleness, but I know you've got tons of degrees, and people can go on your website and see all your accolades and medals and all the magazines you write for, and so, you know, we appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us.
And so everyone out there, you know, check out his website.
And so everyone out there, you know, check out his website.
And so everyone out there, you know, check out his website. Oh, okay. Looks like we got a little technical difficulty there.
Little echo, dude.
Oh, was that? All right.
Went through the tunnel.
Yeah, King went to the tunnel.
Live show. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, everyone out there, thanks for tuning in.
Out there. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. And, yeah. You know, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us for our first live show of the year. Real quick, shout out to Reynolds Towns, who's listening. I believe it's in Sweden. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll catch you all on Facebook. And
yeah.
Krell.
Yeah, I just got to shout out to my boy Gabriel. Thanks for getting it up. Wear a helmet next time you're on a skateboard, knucklehead. And then if you got to find Andre Lima, you can type his name up in YouTube. He's got a bunch of videos in there and tons of good pictures and stuff. Real good guy. If you want to take some Taekwondo classes or jiu-jitsu class, train under the Machado lineage, you can find his schools in Culver City and Torrance, and just go on the website and tell him I sent you, and he's going to charge you double.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Yes, sir.
I got a degree.
Yeah.
But my felony won't let me get a job.
That's real tough.
Life's so hard.
Real hard, baby.
And just today, somebody stole my car and the bus don't run my way.
Messed up, man. What you gonna do?
I think I'll walk the street today.
Oh, really, man.
It seems like I'm stuck in the ghetto, ghetto.
That, baby.
Sometimes it seems like I'm stuck, I'm in the ghetto. Oh, but I got love for the ghetto, ghetto.
That's real, baby.
When I go to my friends,
what are you talking about, man?
Now with open arms, they greet me, let me in. What's up, Tony, baby? Let's go do something.